It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? That's a voice that you know, but you probably didn't recognize. That's the voice of Michelle Malkin. Michelle's a friend of mine, but she's well known to many of you. She was in Denver on Sunday at the 6th Annual Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. And the idea was, of course, to bring law enforcement and their families, to show them how much they were loved. They brought music. They had prayer. They're standing on the platform at Civic Center Park in Denver when Black Lives Matter and Antifa in various iterations showed up banging drums, yelling obscenities, bullhorns, and weapons. And they attacked Michelle. They attacked the man that prayed. They beat him right after he prayed. They attacked Michelle. They sprayed her in the face along with some of the other women. They started beating them. One of the women nearby, you can see in a photo if you look this up. Actually, we should put this on our Facebook page. There's a couple of them. I'm not sure which is the best. Maybe the one, it's Michelle Malkin attacked by BLM Antifa mob at pro-cop rally, and cops can't stop it. And so Michelle was not beaten, but boy, you can hear it in her voice. She is so upset. She is sprayed and gets in her eyes. She loses her shoe. You can watch the videos if you want to see all of this horror. That's what happened to her. And you can see this woman standing next to Michelle because she captures it. I don't know where Michelle's camera, I don't exactly know where she had it. We did just get a glimpse of her. But this one woman has a stick, you know, a beating stick, the kind that extends. And that's who I think Michelle was yelling at. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? These are, of course, white girls attacking, you know, some of our kids out there doing this. Americans, we thought they were. How very strange. This is our children doing this horrendous stuff to other people. And so, Michelle, by the way, the crowd that was supporting the police was very small. But Antifa and the raiders, the fine people of Colorado, the fine, you know, young people of Colorado showed up in force to destroy this rally in support of police. So one person only was arrested for assault. The police did barely anything. And as I understand it, the police chief out there, whose name I can't remember what his name is. I've got lots of paper here. He was, you know, earlier marching arm in arm with Black Lives Matter leadership. So that might explain something. So they're out there to support the police, but the police, under the leadership of their police chief, you know, are, you know, all into Black Lives Matter. He's all into Black Lives Matter. I bet the police aren't. And so this, we can see, we know now that the group, the mob, advertised on social media. It's funny how they don't take those posts down, isn't it? And it says, bring air horns, bull horns, whistles, drums, pots, and pans. No parties for the pigs. That was, you know, advertised. So they all came out. And so that's what happened with Michelle. And then I think, you know, on the other side of this, well, there's a lot more violence to report about, but I'm picking on Denver right now. There's Chicago, how they went after the police when they tried to take down the Columbus statue on Sunday, we have the mayor of Chicago who is all in to Black Lives Matter and social justice and doing nothing. And I can tell you the police in Chicago are going crazy because they're real police, kind of like the New York police. They're actually real police. They actually know what they're doing. They're actually real professionals. They actually know how to do this, but they have horrendous leadership, which is a story everywhere, including in Portland. Meanwhile, you have other ways of destroying people. And another friend of mine, I'm sorry I say it that way because it's not important, except that these are friends of mine, and it is very personal to me, and it's coming to all of you. It's coming to you. I think about this couple in St. Louis who now have been charged by, they were charged by the prosecutor there, Kim Gardner, St. Louis Circuit Attorney, Mark and Patricia McCloskey. They're the ones that tried to protect their home. And then Kim Gardner sent the police in to take their weapons when, remember, 300 to 500 Black Lives Matter Antifa protesters barged through the gates of gated community and threatened them, threatened their lives, threatened their home. And they pulled out these guns. Both were not loaded, we're finding out now. But the police, nevertheless, even if they were loaded, they're gone. So, you know, the McCloskeys cannot protect themselves. Their particular area they live in, the association has said they will not stop these protesters. And they've advised the Gardners to, or McCloskeys to just leave their home. But the McCloskeys are not doing that. But now Kim Gardner, you know, she's charged them with a unlawful use of a weapon. So that, you know, might be you and me in the headlines. I might be talking about you tomorrow, my friend, my listener, whose home was invaded, whose neighborhood was invaded, or I might have a personal story for you tomorrow because it could well be me. Because this is the way it is right now. All of us that love the country and support the president, even if you don't support the president, that doesn't seem to matter anymore either. If you have the wrong thinking, you have to have the right thinking, you see, or you are not safe. Tucker Carlson is not safe. And I want you to hear entirely what he said last night about what the New York Times is doing to him. Let's listen to clip 12.
Last week, the New York Times began working on a story about where my family and I live. As a matter of journalism, there is no conceivable justification for a story like that. The paper is not alleging we've done anything wrong, and we haven't. We pay our taxes. We like our neighbors. We've never had a dispute with anyone. So why is the New York Times doing a story on the location of my family's house? Well, you know why. To hurt us. To injure my wife and kids so that I will shut up and stop disagreeing with them. They believe in force. We've learned that. 2 years ago, a left-wing journalist publicized our home address in Washington. A group of screaming Antifa lunatics showed up while I was at work. They vandalized our home. They threatened my wife. She called 911 while hiding in a closet. A few weeks later, they showed up again at our house. For the next year, they sent letters to our home threatening to kill us. We tried to ignore it. It felt cowardly to sell our home and leave. We raised our kids there in the neighborhood, and we loved it. But in the end, that's what we did. We have 4 children. It just wasn't worth it. But the New York Times followed us. The paper has assigned a political activist called Murray Carpenter to write a story about where we are now. They've hired a photographer called Tristan Spinski to take pictures. Their story about where we live is slated to run in the paper this week. Editors there know exactly what will happen to my family when it does run. I called them today and I told them, but they didn't care. They hate my politics. They want this show off the air. If one of my children gets hurt because of a story they wrote, they won't consider it collateral damage. They know it's the whole point of the exercise, to inflict pain on our family, to terrorize us, to control what we say. That's the kind of people they are. They'll deny this, of course. They'll claim it's just journalism, just the facts. Really? So how would Murray Carpenter and his photographer Tristan Spinski feel if we told you where they live, if we put pictures of their homes on the air? What if we publicized the home address of every one of the soulless robot editors at the New York Times who assigned and managed this incitement to violence against my family? What about the media editor, Jim Windolf? We could do that. We know who they are. Would that qualify as journalism? We doubt they'd consider it journalism. They'd call it criminal behavior if we did it, and that tells you everything.
All right, so that was Tucker Carlson last night. Enough said about that. Enough said about that. And that makes me want to transition into masks. Because I keep telling you every day, this business of COVID and the masks has much deeper implications than just wearing a mask. It's not about just wearing a mask. Well, someone sent me a video this morning that I thought was pretty startling. And actually, even I might not agree with every single thing said in this little short clip. We can talk about that later. But I do agree with his premise. I absolutely do. Let's listen. It's clip three. It's just a mask.
It's just a mask, you guys. Don't be a jerk. It's for the greater good. It's just a vaccine, you guys. Don't be a jerk. It's for the greater good. In 4 months, the U.S. was transformed into an obedient socialist country. Government dictated what events are acceptable to attend. Violent protests that instill fear are okay. But church services, family funerals, and patriotic celebrations are dangerous. And you bought it without a fight. Standing in a graduation line is a safety hazard. Small businesses were forced to close, but crowds to support the corporate money machine at Walmart, Lowe's, and Home Depot are okay. Come on! It's just a mask and safety precautions. How about a little hush money? Here's $2,400 that we stole out of your paycheck in the first place. Enjoy. Buy something with it from a big corporation. In less than 4 months, government closed public schools, then restructured education under the guise of public safety. In less than 4 months, our government demonstrated how easily people assimilate to guidelines that have no scientific premise whatsoever when you are fearful. In less than 4 months, our government successfully instilled fear in a majority of the population in America that allows them to control every aspect of your life, including what you eat, where you go, who you see, and your toilet paper. And the most dangerous and terrifying part, people are not afraid of the government who removed their freedom. They're afraid of their neighbors, family, and friends. And they hate those that won't comply. It's absolutely terrifying to me that so many people don't question authority. They are willing to surrender their critical thinking skills and independence. They just gave up without thinking. Do you know what's coming next? It's just a vaccine. Come on! It's for the greater good! Wait until you're told that you can't enter any store or business without proof of the COVID-19 vaccine. Wait until you can't go to public events or get on a plane without proof of receiving the vaccine. Don't think it's possible? Well, you already allowed the government to say when you can go outside, where you're allowed to go, and accepted a new unproven digital education for your kids in the last 100 days. You followed blindly because you were told to do so. You're kidding yourself. The mass behavior won't be repeated with a vaccine or whatever the next step is. I don't follow politics. I don't care about that stuff. I don't think about it. 6 million Jewish people were exterminated in Germany because 97% of the population cowered to populist control. Nobody wanted to think about it. It's easier just to ignore it. But that couldn't happen here in America, right? They got you without a thought, without a fight. Just like France, just like Russia, just like China. Welcome, comrade.
All right. I don't know who did that, and I don't know who the person is. And but you know what? I think he's right. This is what I've actually, not about every detail, because I don't know about coins, and I don't know about everything that he said, but this is the concept. We have relinquished our freedoms so easily. We have turned against each other. We believe the government knows everything. It's just stunning to me. How did we get to this place? And those of us that fight back, we are the most hated. We are the most hated. How dare we speak up? How dare we not wear masks or say, we don't really think this is valid. We really don't think this is necessary. How dare we say that schools should be open? How dare we say, well, how dare in California churches should continue to have at-home Bible studies? How dare they should continue to sing because the governor, the great governor of California, has said they cannot. So now there are two lawsuits about that. They will not stop. Look at the couple in Michigan now wearing ankle bracelets because they had the COVID virus, but they aren't. They're non-symptomatic, asymptomatic. It's just amazing what we're letting them do.
The Ministry of Preborn is dedicated to helping save preborn babies from abortion through ultrasound. And even in this time of national crisis, Preborn is there. Here's Dan Steiner, president of Preborn.
No college classes and sheltering in have led to an explosion of unplanned pregnancies. Women are panicked about their pregnancies and wanting to abort. Our crisis line is the busiest it's ever been. Here's Catherine, one of our crisis line operators.
Girls are often desperate being pregnant in this pandemic. With your help, we are able to be here for them.
The Ministry of Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country and the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. Would you join Preborn in the cause for life? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say the keyword baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Walter Copan, Undersecretary of Commerce for Standards and Technology. Mr. Copan is responsible for promoting innovation and industrial competitiveness through scientific and technological advancements. Psalm 111:2 reminds us of the wonders created by the Lord for us to study and enjoy. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to give wisdom to Walter Copan as he works to promote scientific innovation in the United States. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
These challenging times have shown a college degree is more important than ever. But if the loss of Virginia's tuition assistance grant for certain new online students is holding you back, Liberty University is here to help. We're stepping in to replace your lost VTAG funds with our LU Tag Award and combining it with a $3,600 undergraduate transfer student scholarship or our already low first responder and military discounts to save you up to 60% on your degree. We've got this, Virginia. Learn more by texting LU Tag to 49595. That's LU Tag to 49595.
The Memphis City Council is going to consider renaming a stretch of Poplar Avenue to Black Lives Matter Avenue. Council members say it's the only way to recognize the worth of black lives within a society that has historically devalued black life. And the only way to do that is to rename Poplar Avenue. By the way, Poplar Avenue named after a tree, not a Confederate war general. Critics say it has nothing to do with honoring the black community and everything to do with sticking it to police officers. That's because the city's criminal justice center is located on, you guessed it, Poplar Avenue. Not only that, but Black Lives Matter is a Marxist organization that wants to overthrow our way of life. They may as well name Poplar Avenue Karl Marx Boulevard. And everybody knows that's a dead-end street. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Masks are not political. The science says that face coverings are the best way to slow the spread. And if you don't want to close things down again, if you want to reopen the schools, if you want to keep businesses open, if you want to go to sports, you've got to wear the mask. And so I think the president is becoming a leader on this issue. Maybe now, once again, MAGA will stand for Masks Are Great Again.
That's the familiar, trusted voice of Steve Doocy this morning on Fox and Friends. And I really like Steve, really like him. But I have said to you repeatedly that Fox long ago joined the team, whatever team this is, that is, if you listen to Fox every day, everybody in America is in imminent danger of losing their lives to COVID. You must wear a mask, and people, especially in Texas and Florida, and then the South, are dropping like flies. New York and New Jersey, why, they're doing just fine. But it's spreading. It's going to get worse. It's going to be worse by the fall. We can't open the schools. This is what we're hearing every day, even on Fox, and even from trusted people that many of us have enjoyed through the years, like Steve Doocy. I find myself wondering, you know, I get on a rant because I feel very strongly about this But I don't want to be, I don't want to be, have an opinion without it being true. And that's why I look to people like our next guest. Alex Berenson is another person, the former New York Times reporter, who is, his wife is a doctor in New York, is one, to me, of a very honest reporters about this, what's going on. And so I do look to him. But I also look to Phil Kirpin, because I think Phil has done some really good research and is really interested in facts, like I am. I have a lot of emotion about it, but I really am interested in the facts. Phil is the president of American Commitment. He's a nationally syndicated columnist. He's the chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition. And he's author of the book, the 2011 book, Democracy Denied, among many other things. Phil is a really trusted person in Washington, D.C. And now that he's speaking on this, he's become a really valuable resource. Phil, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
Okay. I just want to ask you some basic questions, Phil, that I think people are, are asking. The president last night has tweeted out himself in a mask. My understanding is that his staff, some people around him, have persuaded him it's the thing to do, and now he's going to reinstate these daily briefings with probably our favorite Dr. Fauci. But I want to ask you about masks, because I have a clip, I could play it, of Dr. Fauci telling us in April, I think it was, how worthless masks were. I have a tape of Rand Paul saying that it's kabuki theater. I could go on and on. I could play a lot of clips. But I want to know what you think and what the best research is on the effectiveness of masks.
It's very, very limited. The benefit is very, very limited. And in particular, if we're talking about cloth masks, like a homemade mask or a bandana or just a piece of cotton, it's not blocking much, to be honest. The best sort of laboratory evidence we have for that type of mask says that it blocks about 4 or 5% of respiratory droplets, which means, 95% or so can get through. The studies that show that masks have more of an effect were using surgical masks. They were not using fabric masks. And so surgical mask, I think, can block something like half of the droplets, which might have more of a significant effect. The problem with all of these studies, though, even if you're talking about a mask that is more effective in terms of blocking droplets, is you really need to handle it carefully. And, in the real world, it's not clear that, many people actually get the laboratory-type results of laboratory conditions because, that's really healthcare professionals who've done a lot of training, know exactly how to take it on and put it off so they're not touching the outside, treat it very, very carefully, not touch the mask and readjust it when they're wearing it. A regular person, I fear, and certainly children, are going to get more harm than good from a mask because they're going to be constantly touching it, constantly adjusting it. And, if you take it off and you don't carefully handle it, then, whatever's collected on the outside of it then potentially contaminates you, and you're more likely to get sick. It can collect bacteria and other things. And a lot of these masks, if people are using them more than once, if they're not the disposable ones, they're not washing them. And if you don't wash it every time, it can have all the accumulated germs from the last time you wore it and so forth. And so, in theory, with the right kind of mask, you might get some benefit. In practice, it's not clear to me you're getting any benefit.
Well, you know what? And if we just talk common sense, my husband and I were just at Mayo Clinic for about a week last week. We go there every year for executive health program. And they are mask crazy. They are mask crazy. And so I just want to shout out, like, in the executive lounge when people are eating and they take their masks off. USOCOVID just stops infecting people when you're eating, right? When you're drinking, it just suddenly, it knows, it has this intuition, it has this particle that says to itself, I will not infect people while they're eating or drinking in public. How could that possibly change anything when we take them off, put them on, pull them below our noses? And the other thing, Phil, is I was in the grocery store just last week, and the clerk waiting on me, I asked her how she was doing, and her eyes were all red. She had a mask on. And then she opened up to me. She said, I've had this on for 7 hours. And she said, I always get such a headache. It's toward the end of the day, and her eyes were blood red. There are health problems that come with wearing these masks, and we're making clerks And people who work, you know, they're being forced to wear these for hours and hours. And I had a call from a guy.
By the way, people were not getting sick in grocery stores.
That's right.
They were not wearing masks for months, including in places like New York and New Jersey, where it was really bad. It was not the essential workers, by and large, that were getting it. That was, you know, their own study found that. So, you know, I think you're right that there are a lot of downsides with it, and pretty limited upside, you know, the way they actually get used in the real world.
Yeah.
And the other thing, remember, is it's not all respiratory droplet spread. It can also spread on surfaces. It can also spread with, you know, fecal-oral spread. And so the, you know, the hand-washing and sanitizing of your hands and, you know, making sure everything is clean, especially everything related to bathrooms, I mean, that's absolutely crucial. And if you focus too much on just mask, and somebody goes in the bathroom, doesn't wash their hands, and then they touch something, someone else touches the mask, and the mask could actually become a receptacle for transmission, potentially. So, I mean, I think the public health message, in number one, needs to remain, you know, wash your hands, especially every time you go to the bathroom, make sure surfaces are clean and so forth. You know, we've gotten away from that a little bit, and I worry that might be how a lot of the transmission's happening.
And let me just, one last thing, I mean, maybe one last thing on masks, it might not be. Is it true? Is it true, Phil? Sweden, Germany, and a couple of the other European countries who, not Italy and, Spain, but Sweden and Germany and others who are fully open, their schools are open, their cases are practically gone, to my knowledge. I don't think they ever did mask, did they?
I definitely know all the Nordic countries, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, they rejected masks and have they're basically zero masking. And, you know, the number one mask country in the world is Mexico, which has had a really brutally bad epidemic, probably much, much worse than their statistics admit. And so I think there's a lot of cherry picking when people point to particular countries. I will say that Switzerland, which is one of the countries that I think has handled this about as well as anyone overall, they do have masking on mass transit only, and that might make sense, especially when you look at what a disaster the New York subways were. And so there might be a limited role for masking, but the idea of making people wear them all day, all the time, I'm with you that it's probably more likely to cause harm than good in, you know, in real-world conditions as opposed to laboratory.
Okay, so now the other thing that they hit us with every day is hospitals in Florida and in Texas. Interestingly enough, both very red states where the president has a lot of support, but I don't even need to enter the political part yet. But interestingly enough, the southern red states are, everyone's dying. Well, I'm overstating this on purpose. Everyone's dying. The hospitals are filled, and now they must wear masks, and they must not have rallies, and they must not, you know, have conventions. But what is true here, Phil, about the hospitals? What is true? Are the hospitals filled up from COVID patients?
Well, one of the tricky things about the way they do the statistics is they're now testing everyone who comes into the hospital for any reason. And if they happen to pop positive on the COVID test, and by the way, the tests have a lot of errors, both false positives and false negatives. So don't if you're getting the test, don't assume that it's right. We've seen a lot of mistakes on these tests. But about a third of people who come into Miami hospitals for car accidents are testing positive, and then they add the coding for them. And so we've got a lot of patients who are in hospitals who tested positive, but that's not the reason they're there. They don't actually have COVID symptoms, and they're not sick with it. So the hospital data has been a little bit contaminated by the hyper-testing that's going on, where they just test everyone who comes in the door. That said, they are having some strain in some of these places because they're going through the epidemic the same way the states in the north did, and they've got to work their way through as it moves through their population. But they're handling it much, much better than the northern states did, and they have far, far lower deficits. And from what I can see, generally speaking, the hospital capacity is pretty good still in most of these states. The highest hospitalization rate, percentage of hospital beds that have patients with COVID in them right now, is in Arizona. It's at about, the last I saw, it's at a little bit more than 20%, maybe. I think 22%, 23%. Florida's at about 20% of their hospitalized patients with COVID, and I think Texas is at about 18. These are not unmanageable numbers. These are numbers that are easily within the ability of their systems to cope with. Arizona now appears to be post-peak, by several days in hospitalization, so they will decline. They've sort of met the challenge. Texas appears to be near its peak. At least Houston has probably peaked, which is sort of the main city that's people have been looking at. The border areas may still have a ways to go, unfortunately. Hidalgo County, El Paso County, they've really been hit very, very hard, and they've got sort of a double problem because you've got a lot of American nationals who live in Mexico, and Mexico's has a very bad epidemic right now. And, of course, if you're an American who lives in Mexico and you get sick, you probably want to go home to an American hospital. And so they've got a lot of people coming home from across the border. They've also got some Mexicans who think the same way. I'd rather be in an American hospital. So the governor of Texas has called in a lot of military medical teams that President Trump has provided that are going down to the border to help assist there. That's where they do have some major capacity constraints. And the same thing in California. It's really on the border in Imperial County where they've run out of hospital capacity, and they're now airlifting patients out to the rest of the state. About 600 patients from Imperial County have been moved to hospitals in the rest of the state. And so there are some places that have their that have hit their capacity limits, mostly at the border, but they're dealing with it by sending medical teams there and also moving patients to the rest of the state. And if you look sort of at the statewide hospital capacity, those states are in pretty good shape. I don't think you're going to see anything like the meltdown you saw in New York, especially because, as I said, it looks like Arizona's already peaked, and Texas, at least most of the state other than the border areas, has probably peaked as well.
One thing that I is maddening is this intentional, I think, sort of intermingling the number of cases reported with the inference, and now they call them infections. They say infections. They don't say just cases. People testing maybe carry the virus but are asymptomatic. They say they're infected. And so they make the numbers sound like they are off the charts. And my understanding also, Phil, is that there are lots of strains of coronavirus. Of course, coronavirus has been around for generations that are causing people to get positive tests. I don't know if you know anything about that, but maybe you do. But I will mention that. Yeah, go ahead.
A new paper just came out yesterday by a laboratory scientist in Connecticut who wanted to see how accurate the state test is, and I think the state uses the CDC test, so it's the same test that a lot of states use. And so he did a study where he asked the state for reference samples, and he got 20 samples from the state reference samples. 10 were supposed to be positive and 10 were supposed to be negative. And he did a laboratory test to actually find the virus itself and sequence it in each one of those samples. And he found that only 7 of the supposedly positive samples, 7 of the 10 were truly positive. 3 of them did not have the virus, and he found that only 8 of the negative samples were really negative. He found the virus in 2 of the negative samples, and so that's a pretty bad error rate for a test that's supposedly highly accurate. I mean, basically, it means you're getting the wrong result 25% of the time, at least in those 20 reference samples that he looked at. And I don't know if other states and other tests are as bad as that. He only did look at 20. It's not a huge number. But I think that what it means is you really can't be highly confident in the results of these tests. They're all being used under emergency use authorization. They really haven't been validated. And so to use them on sort of a mass population level and then try to draw inferences and base, major policy decisions like school closures and economic lockdowns on them, I think is really, really sort of medical and policy malpractice. And, the other aspect is even if they really are positive in the sense that a healthy person has the virus in them, that's really an infection without consequence. It doesn't mean anything, especially if that person's not able to infect others, and we're still not really clear on that, on these totally asymptomatic people,
hey,
whether
Phil,
they can actually infect others.
Phil, can you stay with me for 15 more minutes?
Sure.
Okay, good. Because there are a lot more questions. I feel like this is a subject I hate, and yet I can't stop talking about it because I think it has such tremendous implications on what's happening in the country. My guest is Phil Kirpin. He's the president of American Commitment. And Phil, you see him all over television now talking about this, and I'm happy for that. So we're going to pick his brain a little bit more. I want to talk to him about various states, the death rates, and all of that. So I hope you'll stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is Chris Katulka of the Friends of Israel Today radio program, and I want to encourage you to join us this weekend. We're going to be continuing our Encountering Jesus series. We're going to be looking at the life of Jesus as he ministered one-on-one to individuals. And this week, it's the woman at the well. We're going to see the power of Christ's forgiveness, his reconciliation, how he invites us to worship in spirit and in truth. You can listen on this station or connect with us at foiradio.org.
This is Frank Gaffney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. It's your personal daily intelligence briefing about the challenges we face, how they're likely to affect you, and what we can do about them. You can find Secure Freedom Radio here every weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in to learn from our extraordinary experts what you need to know and will want to share. Join us for Secure Freedom Radio tonight at 11 Eastern, right here on AFR.
Having the appearance of godliness, but denying its power. Avoid such people. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The Black Lives Matter organization is a wicked and deceptive front for unabashed Marxism. 145 melanated people were shot in Chicago over the 4th of July weekend and the Monday that followed. More than 30 of them murdered over that time span. Children in Atlanta, New York, New Orleans, St. Louis, and more have been murdered. Families have been ripped apart as they cry for justice in these cases, in most of which no arrests have been made and no suspects identified. Yet BLM, with its millions of dollars, says nothing. That's because Marxists don't care about black lives.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Democrats historically have counted on over 90% of the black vote. If that number drops into the 80s, they're in serious trouble. Barack Obama won 93% of the black vote in 2012, but Hillary received just 88% in 2016, which is why she lost. According to Zogby, right now only 77% of black voters are committed to vote for Biden, while a full 14% plan to vote for President Trump. This despite the media's incessant and obsessive campaign to paint Trump as a racist. Trump reduced black unemployment to its lowest level ever, creating millions of new jobs for blacks in the process. Jobs matter to every family, black or white, and it looks like black families are concluding that Trump is their best hope for the future.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last night, Tucker Carlson recounted how his family was forced to sell their home when its address was published and violent opponents of his conservative political views showed up and threatened them. Now he reports the New York Times is poised to expose where the Carlsons moved. A day before, family members of a federal judge were murderously attacked at their residence by someone they thought was a FedEx driver. This is any public person's nightmare, but all of us should reflexively condemn individuals, let alone prominent corporations, that effectively encourage such violence. The Times has become a vehicle for promoting the takedown of America. Not surprisingly, its revolutionaries masquerading as journalists want to silence one of our country's most influential and courageous defenders. They will be responsible if, God forbid, their doxing Tucker causes him or his loved ones harm. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I know you have avoided being overly critical of the president. Governor, how is that helpful to a governor like you who wants people to wear masks? He says he wears them in certain places. He's only worn a mask to, as far as we know, in public, to Walter Reed Hospital, where he essentially had to wear a mask. He's sending out very mixed messages. And I just want to ask you this. It doesn't really seem to be a battle the president is winning with masks. In the most recent ABC News, Washington Post poll, 66% of Republicans say they wear a face mask around other people, but that is far fewer than the Democrats. So what does that tell you about how partisan this issue has become?
See, I just wanted to show you that no matter where you turn the dial, you will be propagandized 24/7 that you must wear a mask, that COVID is deadly. I want to give you some stats here because I was just fiddling around this morning. I think I did three states. I can only find two quickly here. But in Georgia, for instance, where the governor there is suing the mayor of Atlanta for trying to make people wear masks everywhere they go inside businesses, and he's suing on behalf of businesses. In Georgia, guess what the odds are of you dying of COVID? They are 0.00029. California, Gavin Newsom is telling churches you can't meet, you can't do home Bible study, and for heaven's sake, you cannot sing or can't, I guess, if you're in a Jewish synagogue. You can't do that. You can't do that. Now, California, what are the chances of you dying from COVID? Well, they are less than they are in Georgia. It's 0.000183. So that's the kind of odds. That's what we're shutting down the economy for. That is what people are giving up their freedoms for, to wear masks, to prevent. I keep saying, you know, people, to me, are wearing masks until death is eradicated. I mean, there should just be no death anymore, ever, right? We should just wear a mask until we're sure we will never die. I really do think it's gotten that ridiculous. Phil Kirpin is my guest, and he's going to bring some sanity to the discussion because I get a little upset. But Phil is the president of American Commitment. And he's been writing and speaking about this. In fact, you have a committee that you have founded, the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, right, Phil?
Well, I wasn't one of the founders, but they brought me on board. It was founded by Steve Moore, Art Laffer, Steve Forbes, and Larry Kudlow. And Larry's now left and joined the administration. But they asked me to sort of join and help with the day-to-day operations that I've been doing for several months now, and we've really been focused on getting the economy back up and running again and breaking the fear and the restrictions and everything related to COVID. And we do a daily newsletter that's free on all these issues. I write it with John Fund and Steve Moore, and it goes out every morning. And if people are interested in this stuff, I would really recommend it because that's where most of my writing and work on this, and you know, John Fund does a lot of the writing for it also. But it's free, and you can get our thoughts on this stuff and kind of the best links and articles and facts and information on what's going on. And if people are interested in that, it's committeetounleashprosperity.com, and just to click on where it says hotline, and you can sign up for that.
Okay, excellent. Well, we'll put that on our Facebook page. Committee to Unleash Prosperity .com. Yeah. All right. So now let's talk back again. Now you're going to bring sanity to my my rage. But we are finding, you know, the thing that makes me so angry, Phil, is that every day I hear from people that listen about what they're seeing, and it's pretty dreadful stuff. There was a guy last week who said he was working, forced to wear a mask, and he got he was taken to the hospital. He had CO2 poisoning. Then now we know that there was a Florida man in his 20s listed among COVID fatalities. He had a motorcycle accident. And, of course, that's just one of many stories like that. And then we had reports of a surge of the coronavirus in Texas on infants. It's a false story. So, and you guys are working, the three of you, John and Steve, are all working on trying to break the barrier here of the propaganda. But if you are like me, you must feel like this is an uphill battle. I read
it's
a
really
survey
tough.
Yesterday,
it's
like
really
78%
tough.
Of Americans say they're wearing masks all the time.
Well, it's really weird because the vast majority of the country has had the disease almost completely vanish. Unless you're in the southern states that sort of are going through it now, and that probably has more to do with latitude and seasonality than policy changes because, of course, you know, it's going through basically everywhere in the tropics and the subtropics now. But if you're in sort of the temperate north, it's been over for a couple of months. And by over, I mean it hasn't been at these high seasonal levels. You still get some illness in the off-season, just like you get some people with flu in the summer, but it's not common. It's declined to very, very low levels in the temperate north, and yet people seem to be at a higher level of fear than ever because the media stokes them with these crazy headlines, and people don't know. I mean, here in D.C., I hear people say, oh, it's getting worse, and I say, really? We had 28 people who tested positive yesterday, 28. It's almost completely gone here. But people don't know that because they just see they're bombarded by one headline after another, and sort of it gets to them and it affects them psychologically, and they assume it must be true on some level. That story out of Florida, that Orange County story, was incredible because, you know, the local reporter, and I wish more local reporters were asking questions like this. The local reporter asked a state health official, you know, they said there are two people in Orange County listed as dying with COVID who are in their 20s. Did those people have any other serious comorbidities? Were they already very sick when they got it? And the health official said, well, I know one of them had no comorbidities because he died in a motorcycle accident. I was like, well, wait, what is that? And then he said, well, you know, but maybe the COVID made him crash. That's what he said. We don't know. Maybe the COVID is what made him crash.
The COVID made him crash.
And by the way, that's not an isolated thing. I looked up in the CDC numbers how many death certificates that are in the COVID count have accidental injury listed on them. It's over 3,000.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so, Phil, since you mentioned CDC, that's where I wanted to go next. So we've got CDC Director Robert Redfield. Basically, he said last week that coming fall and winter is going to be the most difficult times we've experienced in American public health. Primarily, you know, like October and November, they're going to be terrible times, like the apocalypse for COVID. So it just happens to correlate with an election. You think? We have to talk about that. I know that we can't get into people's minds and figure out, you know, why they say the things they do, but here is a companion piece. We find out now that the CDC employees have made more than 8,000 federal contributions to PACs and politicians since 2015, but only 5 went to Republican causes. And as a matter of fact, when this COVID outbreak broke out in March, there was an acceleration, and most of these donations from these employees of the CDC, led by Robert Redfield and that's Anthony Fauci so close with, gave to Act Blue, which, as you know, is a wildly successful fundraising platform for Democrats. And then, of course, I could go on, but Hillary for president, Biden for president, Bernie for president, and Warren for president. So we've got something going on here, don't you think?
Well, I think the CDC has been catastrophically bad through this whole thing, starting from the very beginning when, the private sector was banned from testing, and the CDC said, don't worry, our test is going to be ready, and then they couldn't make a test that worked. I remember the original CDC test, when the outbreaks were first starting and we had no ability to test for it, the original CDC test didn't work, it was contaminated with virus. So if they deployed it, it might have made people sick. So they completely failed on the front end with testing. And by the way, there was a stark contrast there with South Korea, which is the country that we always get told did such a better job with testing. South Korea completely outsourced their testing from the beginning. It was all private sector. And we tried to do it the opposite way. We tried to have the government do it through CDC. It was a total disaster. And then, you know, they've been on both sides of every single issue. They've been on both sides of surface transmission. They've been on both sides of asymptomatic transmission. They've been on both sides of masks. And so, you know, how can you have any confidence in the people who are supposed to be experts when they change their mind about literally every aspect of the thing, and they change their recommendations, and their data's been slow, it's been contradictory, they've made major data errors. They combined antibody tests with molecular tests at one point, which gave totally distorted data to the whole country. And so, they've performed atrociously badly. I mean, they've been a total disaster. They've put out guidelines that make no sense. They're obsessed with this 6-foot rule, which is about double the traditional 3-foot or 1 meter rule that the rest of the world is
talking
using.
About social distancing.
Always used. Yeah, so it was always 3 feet. And then they never even really explained why they changed it to 6 feet. But, you know, how can you lay out a school or a business at 6 feet? It's a massive, massive consequential decision they hardly even tried to justify with respect to science. And so I think their performance has been pretty atrocious. And I also think that, unfortunately, Dr. Redfield, who generally makes sense, I don't think he has any control over his own agency. I think the bureaucrats are running the show. They're telling him what they're going to do and threatening to leak to the media that he's anti-science if he doesn't go along with it. And I just don't think he has a handle on the bureaucracy there because, you know, the school guidelines are a great example. I mean, Dr. Redfield comes out and says, we never recommended any school closure. We want every school in America open. These guidelines are just suggestions if schools need help on how to open, but they shouldn't prevent any place from opening. And you look at the guidelines and they're like, distance learning is the safest, you have to be 6 feet apart, all of these crazy things that are essentially impossible. And you say, how can this come out of the agency run by the guy who says the opposite? And, you know, I think it's because I don't think he has control of his own agency. And they are hard left, and they do have an agenda. And unfortunately, you know, the easiest thing in the world, if you're a business or you're a local government, is just say, hey, we're going to go with what CDC says, even if it doesn't make much sense.
Well, interesting. I thought it was pretty telling when Deborah Birx said probably 3 months ago that she didn't believe anything coming out of the CDC. Deborah Birx said that publicly. All right, so now we're going to start these daily briefings again, and here comes Anthony Fauci. You know, I'm sorry, I'm not a fan. Well, let me just say that he's actually praising now New York and their coronavirus response. He says they're the model. They did it correctly. Love to hear from you about that, Phil.
New York and New Jersey, actually, New Jersey's a nose ahead on the worst in the world, but New York and New Jersey had the worst population fatality rates in the entire world, worse than Lombardy, Italy, which everyone thought would be impossible. And so they literally did every single thing wrong, especially their mass exposure of nursing home residents, the oldest and the sickest and the most vulnerable, the running of the subway with no sanitation, packed 24/7, you know, the panic that they instilled in the city, the hard lockdown where they forced multi-generation families into their homes, and you know they all got infected, and the oldest got you know the grandparents died, and just they did everything wrong, and you know if they had done almost nothing, if they'd done very little, just give public health advice, they probably would have had an outcome similar to Sweden, which has about 580 deaths per million. Instead, they had about 1,600 or 1,700 deaths per million population, and so they did three times worse than the, you know, the essentially hands-off approach of Sweden. It's almost impossible to do as badly as New York and New Jersey did. No one else in the world has, and the fact that Fauci is praising it means that either one, he still doesn't understand that this has a natural rise and fall, and you don't need to contain it for it to fall. You just need to make sure your hospital capacity can keep up. And so either he doesn't understand that still, which is would be absolutely incredible and astonishing and sort of derelict of him, or, and this is what I think it is, he was in such close daily contact with Governor Cuomo and recommending all these things that when he defends New York, he's essentially defending himself. And that's why he has to do it, even though it's basically indefensible.
And yet, now we're going to hear from him probably every day and Redfield every day. And now they've talked the president into wearing a mask. You know, he's got to be the example to all of us. And yet, Phil, we are swimming up a current of incredible lies. And the consequences are horrendous. And I just, I think of this couple who was wearing this ankle bracelet in Kentucky because the wife tested positive without symptoms. And the health department wanted her to sign an agreement that she wouldn't leave the house without calling them any time. So we are at risk of personal freedoms. And just a word from you about 30 seconds, really, just your closing thoughts about this discussion.
Yeah, you know, that story in Kentucky was so sad because this was a woman who was just trying to, she didn't have any symptoms, she wasn't sick, she was visiting her grandmother, and she just wanted to make sure she was negative. And there's free testing. She's like, great, I'm going to go get the free test. Happens to pop positive, maybe it's a false positive, maybe it's an asymptomatic, who knows, but they said, okay, you're going to be confined to essentially home arrest now. So what are we telling people? What are we doing in this country when that's going on? And I just think we're in sort of a mass delusion event, a mass hysteria event.
Absolutely.
And I hope we snap out of it.
Me too, Phil. And so you and I are going to do our part, and I know a lot of other fine people are doing the same. So we just can't stop speaking the truth while we still can. Phil Kirpin, remember the committee to unleashprosperity.com. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio. Faith.